This is Radical Love Live, an ongoing series of podcasts and special events where we explore faith outside the boxes. Hosted by Mark Dilcom and Kelly Wilson.
Hey, Kelly.
Hey, Mark. How are you?
I'm awesome. And you?
I'm good. I'm good. Thanks. So what are we talking about today?
Well, Kelly, we have a fabulous guest with us today who we're going to interview about her new book. Please welcome to the show, Maggie Lourdes.
Thank you. So,
welcome.
Hi, Maggie.
Great to be here.
We are thrilled to have you here. So for our listeners, Maggie recently published a book called Butterfly Angels, and she's going to share with that book her experiences, why she wrote it. And so let's get started into that.
Well, so,
I wrote
the book mainly as an inspiration from the Eucharistic revival that the Catholic Church is currently doing. And the Eucharistic revival is in its second year, and it's an attempt to get people to appreciate Holy Communion, come back to church if you've been absent for church, and also recruit new people to visit the church and hopefully connect with God. And as I was writing the book, very inspired by this event in the Catholic Church, I believe I was divinely inspired further to look into some social issues of our time. I started thinking hard about the church's past and the church's views currently on particular groups like the LGBTQ community. Mm-hmm. So even the fact that I'm very Catholic, I love the church, I have some objections to some of its history, obviously. I went through some perilous times myself. I left the church for a while. And I was drawn back, but this ignited my interest to, you know, pray for the healing of the church and have it intact in a better way than it currently is. So the book was inspired by the church, but yet it led to criticism by the church. And essentially, it started out as an attempt to get readers to think about that overarching battle between good and evil in our world and to focus on God's purpose for you as an individual. And to make sure that you understand everything you do, every decision you make in your life, every single minute of every day either helps God or it helps the devil. It either bolsters good or it bolsters evil. So what we do is really essential. And that was the beginning of the text, but then it kind of kept up evolving and germinating into deeper things for me personally. And they found their way into the book.
Wow. So I love that. And thank you for opening it up with, what started all of this. Your background and your experience, you say you're Catholic and you were raised Catholic as well, correct?
Yes.
Yeah. And what was that like? Were you active and go through the process as you were growing up?
Yes, I was an active Catholic. My mom was not Catholic. She was Methodist, and she has some Jewish in her background as well. Mm-hmm. So I was Catholic. My dad was very strict, came from a very traditional background. But my mom off to the side used to whisper in my ear, make sure you think for yourself. Don't become indoctrinated. So I'm not a cafeteria Catholic. I go to Mass, but I also have no problem recognizing the faults, the stumbles, the misgivings, and the problems sometimes that, you know, organized religion can have on people just because of the weight and the power that it has and the reach that it has. So I'm very aware of all of that. It was difficult for me at times to be Catholic. Like I think I maybe mentioned before, I'd left the church, maybe in a prior conversation with you for a number of years, because I couldn't handle it. I was really nauseated by the sexual abuse scandals, and I came back, but it wasn't without a lot of soul searching and a journey of my own.
That's a powerful statement, as we know, and it's not, well, we're talking about the Catholic Church in this context, but this is not solely their issue. It's all denominations under the Christian tradition have this issue of, I don't think it's too severe to use the word hemorrhaging, people who connect to the institution. They may have not lost their faith, but they're just simply can't take any more of what's right. going on. You call out, you know, mentioned specifically the sexual abuse that was taking place inside the Roman Catholic Church, but see it again in different denominations. Right. My point is, though, people typically, at least, you know, in my understanding and what the polls are saying, people usually don't return to practice an active practice faith. Yeah. They go spiritual, but not religious, usually, right. SBNRs. So what was it that was drawing on you, tugging at you to come back into to the church?
Well, it's seared in my heart. I mean, I was raised Catholic and I truly believe in a lot of the doctrines that they teach, not the ones that hurt people. I want to be very clear. But for instance, the reverence to the Virgin Mary, that's a big part of my life. I love to pray to the Virgin Mary for intercession. So there's things about it that are really, like I said, they're seared into my heart. And when I say I took a break for about 8 years. It wasn't like I didn't go to church for a week or two. So I really did a lot of soul searching. And I really believe that religion and spirituality are very different. I think religion is an avenue or a pathway to spirituality. But if you were to put the two side by side, in my mind, spirituality is a much more escalated, greater way of being in communion with God. I think of Jesus and God as being spiritual. I don't think of Jesus as being Catholic or Methodist or, you know, I know he was Jewish when he was here on earth. I understand that. But I mean, now he was very clear that, you know, we're one in God. And I don't think he excludes people because they don't choose a particular religion. So I just see religion as, you know, a vehicle to get to God. And some people don't need that. Some people are, you know, able to reach God through just pure spirituality. Some people prefer to go to a mass or go to a service or watch televangelists on TV or go to a synagogue or a mosque. I really think it's important for us not to get overly critical and condemn one religion as being some kind of evil empire, because they do bring people to God. You just have to be very vigilant and make sure they stay in check and hold them accountable when they do something wrong in a massive way, because they have a greater duty to be good. They're representing God, supposedly, on earth. So when a priest does something wrong, I'd triple the penalty for the priest because, you know, they have that leadership role that they should be extra careful to try to trumpet the word of God in peace and love.
Well said. Kelly, I don't want to capitalize on all the questions here, so jump in anytime, as we always do in these conversations. It's great to have you on this, Maggie. But I am going to ask a question. It goes to the book here. So the title, Butterfly Angels. First, do you want to explain the title?
Well, the butterflies play a role in the book. My mom's getting older and my dad's older. They're both almost 90 years old. And it's difficult watching people you love grow older and have physical infirmities. So in my mind, I'm like, I can't figure this out. You know, it's another one of pieces of my journey. Why is my mom so sick? Why is my dad having all these health issues? Why God? Why God? And at a moment I was quiet and I was sitting in a park somewhere and I thought, you know, the human soul, I analogized it to this and it helped me get through it. That the human soul is like a butterfly in a cocoon. At some point that cocoon decays and it drops away, but the best part then emerges. And I kind of analogize that to the human body. As hard as it is for me, and I still struggle with it, you know, when my mom and dad are finally gone, the best part of them will come out and reunite with God, their spirit. So I kind of got through a difficult time in my life when my folks were aging, thinking of it in that way. So the butterflies have a special meaning to me.
Okay. And then, of course, there's the other word, angels. Everybody listening to this, the book, to no surprise, involves, as Maggie already said, there's good and evil inside of that. And they take form as angels and demons in the book. So let's dive into that a little bit. Angels, did you have experience with angels at any time through your own experience?
Well, not in a traditional way. And there's these hierarchies of angels. It gets so complicated, really complicated. We think of angels like on a Valentine's Day card, but religions, all different religions, really view them, you know, some are wheels of fire and with eyes all over them. And, you know, seraphims are fiery serpent-like angels with many wings. So we don't kind of in our own minds think of them like that. But nonetheless, I've never seen an angel with human eyes, but I feel strongly that they're with us every day and we're all touched by them. And I had a spiritual experience where probably the closest thing I came to is I believe that I had an encounter with God one time when I was very young, but it wasn't angelic. It was definitely something a little more powerful for me at that point in my life.
Wow. Well, it sticks to you to this day.
To this day, it got me through a bad time and I never forgot it. You know? but no angels. I'm not that good. They're not revealing themselves to me.
But if anybody was looking at the video, there's an angel over your left shoulder there in the form of a ceramic statue. Yeah. So
that's the best I can offer. My angel plate.
And scripture says that you could be entertaining angels unaware. So, you know, you may have entertained angels and not even known it.
Yeah, Hebrews. And that's in the front of the book. So that's the very, very first page of the book references what you're talking about. And that's why I say I do believe good and evil spirits are all around us at all times, trying to influence us in both directions. It's just we have a choice which way to go and which voice to listen to.
So I've really been enjoying I picked up your book this week. I've really been enjoying reading it. I hope that our readers will pick it up, because it's really it's an interesting read, and it kind of there's a real range of feeling, from kind of whimsical to some very serious topics along the way. So I'm kind of enjoying the ride. One thing that I noticed is that there's a lot of scripture quotes in it, like very specific scripture. And I was wondering if you could talk a little bit about your relationship to kind of the Bible itself, as opposed to the canons of the church.
Well, that's a difficult relationship for everyone, because the Bible conflicts, you know, reasonably in law. I don't know if your listeners know, I'm an attorney by trade, and in law we say reasonable minds can differ. That's why we need a judge, because when we have disputes, two very well-meaning people coming to different conclusions, we need someone to arbitrate over that. And the Bible is that type of text. That's why we don't have unity. That's why we don't have one big church where everyone goes to, because we have these different interpretations. So my relationship with the Bible, I don't think, is unlike other people's who critically think. I question, well, gee, this conflicts with this, and that doesn't comport with this other verse. And I believe that's why Jesus answered the question when he was asked, what's the greatest commandment of all? Very crisply and plainly and easily understood. He said, love God with all your heart, mind, and soul, and love your neighbor as you'd love yourself. And in me, with being an attorney by trade, I look at that kind of as a Supreme Court ruling, that when Jesus spoke, he's the ultimate authority. When the Supreme Court speaks, there's no other disputes that can overturn that ruling and wisdom. So to me, if I find myself in conflict, I just go back to that ultimate default, which I think we're allowed to rely on. Love your neighbor and be full of love and spread peace. My peace I give you, my peace be with you, and spread that core value that Jesus very unambiguously put upon us to follow.
I love that. That's one of the notes that I took while I was reading is this tension between conscience and the canons. As well. So there's the relationship between the scripture and the church, but also then personal conscience and the idea of like seeing God through many prisms. It seems like there's a focus on the personal experience as well.
Because I think God speaks to all of us uniquely. He's built all of us very uniquely. He goes to great lengths to make us individually unique in his image. So he has to speak to us as a mother would speak to her child. My mom communicates and speaks to my sister differently than she speaks to me, because she knows I'm a different person. So I think it's important for us to be respectful of other people when they receive God in a different way. He's speaking to them as individuals, telling them maybe where to go to church or where not to go to church. And he guides them as individual children, just like our parents on earth do the same. So we see God through different prisms. We see him through Islam. We see him through Hinduism. We see him through Christianity. That's all good. Just leave people to reach God as he draws them and calls them to reach him. And those are the different prisms that I had in mind when I know exactly the part of the book you're speaking of, when Lucy says God sees God reaches people and people see him through different prisms. I was alluding to that need for us to have an inclusivity and not just tolerance, but respect for other people's faiths.
Wow, that's such a loving and thoughtful approach.
Well, that's what God's grounded in, I think, is wanting us to be loving and respectful and not condemning and difficult and hateful with one another. That oneness that Marx talks about, that's at its core. is the love and compassion, the fact we're all knitted together as one.
Question for you when it comes to the writing of the book. What you've shared so far, is this a statement on your faith and your own journey as well in any way? Is there, how much personal story is within the story of Lucy and Og?
That's really a good question. At the crux of it, the overriding theme of questioning God's purpose is part of my journey. I do that almost every day. I mean, I go to the church and I pray when no one's there. I'm like, please, God, make sure that I'm on the right path. Show me what I'm supposed to be doing. And I question that a lot. And it dips in my life when maybe I'm not getting what I think I deserve or want. I feel like Og the angel, you know, when he's rebellious and tests God's purpose for him. So absolutely, my personal journey has had those moments and events in it where, you know, I'm dissatisfied or I feel like I haven't gotten what I deserve out of life. I think many people feel that way. And that shows I'm on a little lower spiritual plane, right? I struggle to be happy just in God's purpose for me often. And I keep trying and trying and hopefully, you know, hopefully I'll be led into heaven by his grace because I won't make it any other way.
Yeah, okay. I like the way you think.
But yeah, Og's journey of rebellion and difficulty and accepting God's purpose for him with a contrite heart definitely have been periods in my life where I've had that same feeling.
So curious about the two cities you picked, Detroit. Now you live in Detroit, right?
I live outside. Yeah. Outside of Detroit. Yeah. Yeah. It's okay. Detroit's a great place. I live closer to Ann Arbor. Yeah. But I visit Detroit. I've worked there. I've gone to school there, to law school. So yeah, it's
beautiful area, all of Michigan in that area. And the people are wonderful as well. So it's a two-part question here, with both, why did you select some of the venues of Detroit that felt purposeful? And then Denver.
Well, Detroit I chose because I couldn't not have written a book and been from Michigan and not included Detroit. And I would have heard from everybody in my circle of people, like, why did you choose something other than Michigan? Because it is a great place and my life is here. Yeah. And I wanted to showcase that and have people think about my hometown. Denver was a little bit different. I had spent time in Denver as a young woman and was really struck. The mountains out west, the whole indigenous people that are still there and still the spirituality that they bring to the West struck me as a young woman. And I thought, if I'm going to talk about a spiritual journey, there's no better place to talk about it than out West. It's just a very, very special place. And a lot of sadness has happened through our history in those areas. And it's palpable still when you visit the West. And so is the joy of the people. But I needed to put that in because spiritual journeys certainly have taken place there.
Yeah, those wide open skies out there just they invite you to think in really grand terms.
They do. Yeah. The most beautiful rainbows I've ever seen were out west in Wyoming. They just go from horizon to horizon in the deepest, richest colors. Here in Michigan, they kind of look foggy. You know, if you see a rainbow, the colors kind of blend together, not out west. They're just like the one I would imagine came over after the flood in Noah's Ark.
Nice. So this book, who is its targeted audience?
I thought of young people when I wrote it. That was one of the reasons why I kept it to be a short read. I really wanted younger people to be able to think about God in a light, entertaining way. I remember as a young person, I really loved short stories. I preferred short stories. And I wanted to reach young people to be able to tell them, look, you can read this in a couple of hours, but pack a lot of imagery and pack a lot of really important messages in. Some of the messages are nuanced and you may not be able to really get them unless you're a little bit older and have more experience. But I hope the overriding theme of it is reachable to young people or reachable by young people.
Excellent. Well, that was my sense of the first few pages getting into the book. I thought, okay, well, I'm probably not, you know, as a, you know, 59-year-old guy here reading this, I didn't feel I was a part of the audience in just in your writing style. but then I, by chapter two, I was like, oh, okay. Oh, I knew who this was for. And yes, I would definitely, I felt that sense. And they put myself in the shoes of what I was, a younger self. And I, you know, like you, I did enjoy those short stories. And I, as you said, and Kelly mentioned it earlier as well, for a, what is a relatively short, easy read, there's a lot packed into that. Mm-hmm. And the way you tell the story is really well executed. It is, I don't want to say it's clinical or crisp, but because I don't want to make it sound like you've written it as a law brief, but because it's not, but you just don't, there are no stones unturned or any loose ends or anything else. You just bring it all the way through. And I think it's an extremely well-written book. It's just fundamentally what you did with it.
Thank you. Yeah, I've been writing for a long time. In the back of the book, it references my biography. And my first article was published when I was 9. I mean, I literally was writing to the editor at 9 years old, complaining about something at my school. But but I continued writing, and I was featured in the Detroit News with full-blown feature articles at 13, 14. That continued on to college. I wrote a screenplay that was optioned. So I've been writing a lot and publishing for both work and pleasure for a long time. And this really was a joy for me to be able to find the time to do it. And I really did think about every word and every line. I wasn't sloppy about it. I didn't rush it. And I tried to foreshadow properly and do all of the, embrace all of the writing techniques that you're supposed to. And hopefully I packed a sound, important message into it.
You did. Congratulations.
Because, it seems like you made a very good case. That's how it is.
I hope I made a case to be good in life. That was my goal. Please pick the right things and do the right thing. Be compassionate, loving.
Yeah. So, you know, we've talked about your message of being good and evil inside of this, and the target audience being the teen reader, somebody there to get there to understand some of the nuances that go behind spirituality. And parts of the institution are written in there. And yeah, there's one priest in particular who has shown a better, kinder way. The scene in Denver, and why I asked that question at the cathedral, and the folks that came in to worship, and how ultimately he welcomed them into it. I think that was a powerful story in there. And the fact that he was, you know, it was, you know, folks coming from the LGBT community, including you had, you know, a whole variety in there that represented the community. And he saw the light, dare I say?
Yeah, because not to give too much away about the book, but early in the book, there was a miracle and someone was cured of an eye disorder, a young person, a toddler. He was later cured of a blind spot. And the same angel prayed for him, but this wasn't a gift of sight with his physical eyes. This was a gift of sight that she prayed for to open up his heart and to see diversity as a strength and to see LGBTQ people as they are, equal in God's eyes and equal in his heart. And I'm just going to say that, you know, the Catholic Church has a problem with this. It's divided at this point in time. There are people for making the church more welcoming. Pope Francis would be more on that side. There are people called rad trads, radical traditionalists, and they say, no way. You know, they have to be kept in a particular sinful position if they're open. The priest, he sees the light and sees that second latter description is not of God at all.
Well said.
The rad trads. That sounds like the gang from around the corner that you don't want to mess with.
Yeah. Yeah. It's kind of a scary, I don't know if I'd want to carry that title around, right?
Yeah. Well, and a lot of churches are dealing with that right now. The United Methodist Church is dealing with that. A few years ago, the Episcopal Church had a big schism because of that. So it's happening all over.
Yeah.
And
it's incredible to me that a whole community of people could be prejudged by who they love. It really is mind boggling to me. Just vexing is the word.
Mm-hmm.
It's millions and millions and millions of people. When I was at Mass this morning, they had a Bible camp for the young people, and there's a lot of young kids. And I thought about this interview, and I looked around and I thought, the priest at that church, I'm not a member of that church, but he's a little bit on that conservative side. And I've heard him say things from the pulpit when I visit that parish that are anti-LGBTQ. And I thought to myself, he's a good man otherwise. I wonder if he realizes that statistically speaking, 10% of these young kids today are probably going to end up in the LGBTQ community, whether they're out or not. And what he says really matters to their spiritual and mental and emotional health going forward.
Amen.
So,
one thing I wanted to ask about, there are a number of miracles in the book, and I wanted to ask if you had any personal experience or folks that you know who had personal experience with miracles.
Well, I mean, not to sound flip, but I just had one last year. I was in Florida vacationing, and my mom got really hurt. She fell, and she's in her 80s, and she had a really grievous injury. And I felt terrible, immense guilt. That's the benefit of being Catholic. Anyone mm-hmm. listening that's Catholic knows you're guilty about everything. So I ended up being massively guilty about going to Florida for 4 days. And I had someone staying here at the house to help her with groceries and tasks around the house. And when I came home, she was in really bad shape. And I remember it was a year ago this month. And I remember sitting in the hallway of the hospital and really crying. I just, if I hadn't gone, this wouldn't have happened. And a priest came up to me in the hallway. And I said, "You said, did I ever meet any angels?" When I left the last day at the hospital, I pointed to him and hollered his name really loud and said, "Father so-and-so is an angel." Because when he approached me, he just came out of nowhere. And he said to me, "Maggie, God has a plan for your mom. God has a plan for you. Whatever happens, you have to accept it's God's plan." And at that point, they were pretty much saying, rehab and a nursing home and likely death. And I said, "Okay, I'm going to accept that as truth." And when they got ready to discharge my mom, she couldn't even stand up. And I looked at her and I said, "I'm taking mom home. And you can send the home care out. And I'm going to say in 3 months, we're going to be at the coffee shop." And the nurses literally, I could tell, they looked at me like, this woman, she doesn't know what she's in for. This lady is going to die at her house. Well, my mom's in the next room over. And when we get done, we're heading down to the coffee shop. So I went to church every morning and went to mass. I brought her home the Eucharist. I prayed once I knew she was out of the woods, to be able to come back to the house. And, I prayed to St. John Newman and I prayed to St. Mary and I prayed to St. Anne, then just to say, please give my mom a good day and comfort and no pain. And every day got better. And the doctors said that was pretty incredible. We had really written her off. She had gone through a terrible heart arrhythmia. It was a mess. And 88 years old, and she's going to outlive me, guys. She is really, she's going to outlive Maggie. I can tell you that. So I really do. I mean, there's stories like this all the time, right? A sick parent gets better, but that really was a miracle in my life. It really was.
Wow. What a great story. Thank you.
Yeah. Can't talk too loud or she'll come through the door and take the mic away from me. She'll tell the story herself.
Well, maybe she should.
No, you don't want to give my mom the mic. You'll be here all day.
Well, at 88 years old, she's going to have some wisdom under her belt. That's for sure.
She absolutely does. And she's, like I said, it was a blessing. As much as I love the Catholic Church, her balance of instilling that critical thinking in me is what's made me a happy person. And so, yeah.
So on that note, Maggie, did you share with her that, did she know you were going to Mass every day and praying and yeah?
Well, she did. And she actually converted to Catholicism for my dad. And when she was about 42 and they're now divorced, but this is, I hope the priest doesn't hear this. And then
it's only the three of us. It's nobody else, Maggie. It's all good.
I'll have to just not. I can't tell the priest I'm on this podcast after I say this. But it was kind of funny because even though she converted to Catholicism, and Catholic priests will only give the Eucharist to Catholics, which I don't agree with either. But I would bring the Holy Eucharist home to her every day and the little pics that they gave me. And about 2 weeks into it, she says, I really appreciate you bringing the Eucharist home, but I'm Methodist and I still have a lot of doubts about that Catholic Church. And I said, oh, no, here I was thinking I was doing this great thing. And I don't know about those Catholics. Those are literally her words. I said, "But Mom, no, I was born Methodist and my great grandma was Jewish. And you remember, Maggie, think for yourself." So she's never let me forget to never abandon critical thinking and don't be indoctrinated.
Wow, that's powerful. Yeah. Thanks for sharing that little tidbit there.
Yeah.
So, and it is interesting sometimes that, like, some of the other, the Protestant churches, how the way that they look at Catholicism. I grew up in an evangelical tradition. I grew up actually not too far from you down in South Bend, where,
oh yeah,
yeah, there were, where Notre Dame University is. So
yeah, Indiana, South Bend.
Yeah, so
Indiana.
That was like the you know, when Notre Dame was playing, that was the one day of the week that the evangelicals were not critical of the Catholics. But other than that, there were all these questions about, like, what are they?
Right.
For Saturdays, sure. It was all good. You could be Catholic on Saturday if it was a game day. Yeah. Okay, gotcha.
You know, but those criticisms, the more I started studying, I realized, like, the Catholics were the only show in town for like 1500 years. I mean, they were the Catholic Church is the church that carried the tradition of, you know, apostolic succession all the way into the modern age. So, you can't just like dismiss the institution that actually developed and invented your religion.
Right. And, you know, it's funny because after I left the church for a while, that struck me. The first time I went back to Mass after my hiatus, I thought about that really strongly. I was, you know, in church and I looked around and I thought, I left, but the church is still here. All these people were coming while I wasn't. And the priest still did Mass every day. And people were still on bended knee taking communion. And the institution is still here. And as much as I have issues, you know, like I'm very clear, I always stand with the victims of any abuse by the church in any way. But the church and the stability that it offers, I thought, woof, you know, I was gone for a long time and I just waltz right back in and everything's the same. And somebody stayed to keep this going. And I do believe there's a great, great value in that stability and that longevity.
Wow. Wow. Well, Maggie, we're kind of wrapping up our time here, but it would be remiss if I didn't ask, was there anything you'd like to share with our listeners that we have not covered in this conversation so far?
Well, I would just say to everyone who's listening, wherever you're at in life, just know that God is with you every minute of every day. And that if you're on a hiatus, like I was at some point, God's patient and he'll wait for you. And he's tapping us all on the shoulder every day and every event that we go through saying, I'm here. He sends us little miracles every day. My rose bushes are blooming. You know, the birds are singing. It's a beautiful day here. The sun is out. Those are all miracles. And don't dismiss them and know that he's with you and that no matter where you are in life, tomorrow's a new day. It starts anew and he's there waiting for you to embrace his love and his charity.
Wow. Well said, Maggie. So again, folks, it's been a real pleasure to have you, Maggie. Maggie Lourdes, author of Butterfly Angels. Maggie, where can they find the book?
You can find the book on Amazon. It's available both in Kindle and in paperback. And it's here. If you're in Michigan, it's in a few local stores here in Michigan. Schuler Books out in Ann Arbor is carrying it. So yeah, please take a look. I hope it's a legacy that when I'm gone, maybe some young person in a library 100 years from now will pick up that book and it'll strike them just at the right time to help them. So it's a legacy I'm leaving behind.
Excellent. Really and Maggie, awesome. If anybody wanted to find out more about you, is there any way they do that or is it all inside the book?
Yeah, you can visit Amazon. I have an author page right there on the Amazon website and all my contact information is there.
Awesome.
Great. Well, Maggie, we really appreciate your time and thank you for writing such a wonderful book. I will leave this as a bit of a cliffhanger here for our listeners. Do you think there's going to be any more of the story of Ogden Lucy?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I left it open and I'm going to disclose some more things about my personal life in the next book. I'm just organizing and waiting and orchestrating. But yeah, they have more to say. the characters have more places to go, more miracles to perform and more lessons to teach us.
All right. Well, we look forward to that next adventure as well.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me. I appreciate you both.
All right. Yeah. Thanks.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Radical Love Live, co-hosted by Mark Dilcom and Kelly Wilson. All rights reserved. You can find our podcast on Spotify, Apple, Stitcher, and other popular podcast platforms. Go to radicallovelive.com to learn more about us, watch recordings of our live events, and listen to our podcast. We also invite you to check out what Kelly and Mark are doing by going to our websites. Find Kelly at kellywilson.com and Mark at markdilcom.com. This is Radical Love Live, where we explore faith outside the boxes.